Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. UFOs, alien abductions, spooky sightings, inexplicable events, and supernatural experiences. Are they just figments of overactive imaginations? Or should we be taking these as serious evidence that the paranormal is real? Whitley Strieber is the author of over 30 books, including the best-selling Communion series, and many novels ranging from The Wolfen and The Hunger to The Greys and his Alien Hunter series, which have been made into movies and TV shows. In his latest book, The Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained, written with Rice University Professor of Religion Jeffrey J. Kripal, Whitley Strieber offers an unprecedented new framing of inexplicable events and experiences that have baffled mankind for millennia to demonstrate that all kinds of impossible things, from extra-dimensional beings to bilocation to bumps in the night, are not impossible at all, but rather are a part of our natural world. Whitley Strieber, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Whitley, Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained has been described as the most important book on the paranormal in 40 years. That's a big statement to make. Would you agree with it? And if so, why?
Well, I think that the book's importance lies in the fact that a person who is a direct experiencer, who has these experiences, has come together with an academic professional who is a mythologist and an expert, especially on modern folklore. The reason it's so important is that this experience is not really accessible to scientific study in the way that it has been attempted in the past and is still to an extent being attempted, because there's nothing to support any kind of study of the type that science normally needs to do. Now, I will add that this is changing. For example, Dr. Jacques Vallée, a French scientist who has been studying this subject for many, many years and has written quite a few books on it, has recently been analyzing some unusual materials that he was given that prove to be really unusual in the sense that they're, the isotopic ratios in this metal are not only not of this world, they are not of any world, and we don't have any ability to create artificial isotopes. It would take almost more energy than the planet than exists on the planet. It's an enormously difficult process that theoretically is possible. We know how it conceivably could be done, but to actually do it is not possible. And yet here these objects, these things are. You can't say they were created on another planet because they weren't created anywhere, and yet they exist. That kind of thing science can do, but the human factor remains very elusive scientifically. So it is through the medium of examining what people experience that we can make progress. And that progress is primarily an academic responsibility, not a scientific one. And this is the first time a serious and well-credentialed academic like Jeff has ever actually sat down with an experiencer and said, okay, let's look at this in terms of the history of this culture, in terms of the history of its folklore and its mythology, and what people are actually saying. And here we are. That's what makes supernatural a new vision. It is a new vision in that sense.
What attracted Jeff Kripal to this project?
Well, that's a good question. He's curious. I would say, but more seriously, as a folklorist, he believes this is one of the most powerful moments of the creation of folklore that has ever occurred. We've been conditioned to think, oh, folklore, meaningless. But that's only the arrogance of the late Victorian era speaking. Folklore rests in experience. People don't just make it up. They have experiences they can't explain, and the explanations they weave around those experiences are folklore. And they sometimes, when they have enough psychological potency, they become myth and are elevated into myth. We're in a situation now where mankind is being touched in some way by a powerful, unknown, and apparently unknowable presence of some kind. And we are building a folklore around it. If you go on the internet, you'll find all of the alien species are named and their different relationships, and there's all kinds of galactic federations, all explanations of how flying saucers work, the names of spacecraft that we have built that are based on the work on the way flying saucers work, all kinds of stuff. It's all made up. It's all us. Some of it may be true. There's really no way to know. But it is essentially a folklore right now.
Both you and Jeff have known incredible professional rejection, religious hate campaigns, censorship, slander, for what you both describe as having sincerely thought out loud in the public square. In the face of so much vilification, what keeps both of you going?
Well, I can't speak for Jeff. I had no choice. This is where I am and what I'm doing. I wish that the communion experience had never come to me, because it was very clear from the point that I understood that it was somehow a real experience and not something that could be explained as a mental aberration of some kind. I felt I had a responsibility to use my tools, which are the tools of the writer, to communicate this experience, because I felt it was important. I didn't know at the time just how much opprobrium would come my way, but I soon found out. And it ruined my life, to be honest with you. It made what would have been a happy and successful life as a writer into a miserable, heartbreaking slog that I am still on now. And the only real saving grace was the strength and support of my wife. And now that she's passed away, I've lost that as well. As far as Jeff is concerned, you'd have to ask him that question. I think he's a very curious man.
Communion was your first nonfiction book. And, you know, that's the book that made you famous. You relate the story of being abducted from your cabin in upstate New York on the evening of December 26, 1985, by non-human beings. Now, that book came out in 1987, but prior to that, you'd left a career in advertising to pursue your writing career, and you published horror novels. Given your background in writing horror stories, did you not think that communion also would be greeted as fiction? I mean, were you not expecting that?
No, I guess I'm too optimistic. I didn't believe that it would be greeted as fiction. I thought that since I'm an honorable man, people would believe that I had it, was at least telling a story that I believed to be true. But instead, they went out of their way to say the opposite and to ignore everything in my story that suggested the truth of it, and but more importantly, to ignore the core of the book, which is stated in big letters in the frontispiece of the early editions of Communion. The human mind winks back from the dark. I didn't go into it with any assumptions about aliens. On the contrary, I went into it with the thought that we may not know who we are. That was ignored in favor of making jokes about rectal probes and aliens and things that really had little or nothing to do with what I wrote.
But you did write that, and you were incredibly open about that experience.
Yeah, but I couched it in terms of questions. I don't know what happened. I never have known. And I found it deeply troubling that the one idea, which is only one of many, that it was alien contact, would be seized on by both sides in that controversy. And I would be used as a kind of a plaything, a football between them, where the UFO side was saying, oh, he was really abducted by aliens, and this is proof that this man at this level of social and cultural significance has come out.
We'll come back to this in a moment, Whitley. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is Whitley Strieber, author of the best-selling Communion series of books. And we're talking about his latest book, The Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained. We'll be back with more after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Radio's What Is Going On show. If you've been on a spiritual journey and know yourself to be more than just your body, mind and emotions, yet still struggle to fully love yourself and the life you're living. If you experience childhood challenges that continue to play out as limiting patterns in your daily life. If you long for success in your relationships and career, but keep finding it eludes you. The Journey Back to Love Symposium will not only dramatically shift your perceptions about love, but also help you understand and integrate all the places where you may have secretly believed you were broken. Filmed over 7 days with 8 internationally renowned teachers and speakers, the Journey Back to Love Symposium series is packed with life-transforming insights, tools, practical processes, gifts, and wisdom. So, if you're ready to transform your beliefs about love, success, and freedom, and to finally put all your perceived limitations, fears, and failures in your relationships and life behind you, I invite you to visit the JourneyBackToLoveSymposium.com and start your journey back to love at a huge discount with the coupon code JBL3.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Whitley Strieber, prior to the break, you were telling us about some of the humiliating fallout that you encountered from writing Communion. What did you think after that about what had happened to you that night in December? I mean, you said that you don't really believe that it was an alien abduction. You weren't entirely sure. What did you think was going on?
Well, I don't really have beliefs. That was something I don't believe. Doesn't interest me it much. It stops questions. And what I did have were quite a few questions and a desire to work with those questions, to refine them and to find places where there could be definite answers that could open the door to deeper questions. So I sort of went on a journey of search afterwards that's going on right now to this very day. And will be my life for the rest of my life. I can't say that I've ever drawn any definite conclusions. I think that there was one conclusion. It was drawn by my wife, Anne, after we published Communion. We began to get a lot of letters from people, not just hundreds, but thousands, tens of thousands, and finally hundreds of thousands, and delivered in great bags. And she took command of this and hired a secretary, and the two of them went through all of these letter by letter over a period of years. She worked on this for at least 10 years, and because they kept coming in, and she came about 3 years into it. She came out of her office one day and she said, Whitley, this has something to do with what we call death. And it was clear from the letters that again and again and again, people's dead friends and relatives would show up in the context of the presence of these beings that the UFO community were calling aliens. And not only that this is an old human experience. It goes back a long time. It's just been couched in different terms by different cultures over the years. Dr. Jacques Vallée, again, has written a book called Passport to Magonia that takes case after case after case from the past and shows how they relate to the modern UFO folklore. It's the same experience. It's a basic human experience, which has never really been addressed in any coherent manner by social sciences, for example, which, though the physical sciences don't have many points of reference, the social sciences certainly do, but never addressed. So I would say that statement, this has something to do with what we call death, is the single most intelligent and insightful thing that's ever been said about it. And that's sort of where my next question forms. What can it mean? Who are they then? And what is the real significance of their presence here?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, why those two together? I mean, I'm probably not alone in having had dreams of people who've passed on. And I'm having almost a lucid dream because, you know, I know that they've passed on in the dream, and yet they're telling me that they're absolutely fine. But why those two things occurring together? I mean, you said that you recalled seeing a familiar face during the initial stages of your first experience. Why did the two come together? I mean, what's the significance of, you know, both phenomena showing up at the same time, do you think?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
What is the significance, do you think, of both phenomena? You know, many people put these experiences down, so they call it UFO. They've had some kind of UFO, alien abduction,
yes.
UFO apparition, etc. And at the same time, if it's so common for dead people to show up at the same time as what they're thinking of as some kind of alien encounter, what is the significance of the two showing up together?
Well, it's because of the fact that this is not about alien contact as we've conceived it. It's about something else. Maybe it involves aliens and maybe it doesn't, but it certainly involves us on a level that we, most of us, don't even believe exists, and that we are told constantly by science doesn't exist. But apparently it does. I'll give you some examples. Anne was very skilled in certain things, and she had a lot of insight into people, with the result that she could gather groups of people to come up to our cabin, knowing that if they gathered together in a group, the visitors would show up. And when that happened, almost always, the first sign of it was that someone would see a dead friend or relative. An example, we had 17 people in the cabin one night, or rather 15 people in the cabin one night. A group of them were sleeping in the living room on cots and fold-out couches and things. And the people in the living room all were awake. I mean, who was actually sleeping on a situation like that? The answer is not no one, except me and Anne, who were upstairs sound asleep, because by this time, this was our life. We were used to it. What happened to these people was this. They all became unable to move, paralyzed. They could all continue to talk to one another. One of them was a magazine editor of a prominent magazine then in those days, New Age magazine, who had promised to feature this on a cover as a cover story if something happened. These dark blue figures came into the room, into the living room, and began to leap up and down like acrobats. And the people could talk and could describe what they were seeing to each other. It was dark, but they could see them. But they could not move. Meanwhile, in the basement, a couple who were sleeping privately woke up to see standing at the foot of their bed, as big as life, a friend of theirs who had died in an earthquake 4 years earlier. And she looked perfectly solid. She wasn't a ghost or anything of any kind. And she said to them quite sweetly, "I just want you to know that I'm fine," and disappeared. Now, that is not about aliens coming down, alien scientists coming down to test people for various things. It's another example, also at the cabin. We had another completely different group up, and one of them was walking on the road in the afternoon and saw her brother standing in the road. She was absolutely astonished because he had disappeared 20 years before and eventually been declared dead by the FBI. No one had ever found him. And there he was. And she said, "My God, where have you been? Come down to the cabin and have dinner with us." And he said, "I just want you to know that I'm all right." And she moved toward him, and he floated back into the woods with a smile on his face and disappeared before her eyes. She came down to the house describing what had happened, and Anne said to me very quietly, "Wait and see. The visitors will be here later tonight." And they were. One of them showed up physically in the cabin, and went to two different bedrooms and woke the people in each bedroom individually. There was a low-light camera on, trained on the hallway between the two bedrooms. I made every effort to document this whole thing, of course. It did not show up on the low-light camera, but all three people it woke up saw it just as if it was an actual physical person. So that's the reality as it actually is. That's what's happening.
In the supernatural, you relate many experiences like this. Lots of them occur in at your cabin. Do you have any thoughts about why they seem to occur so much there? Was there something special about that particular area?
Oh, I lost the cabin for financial reasons years ago. One thing that happens to a person like me is you soon find that nobody will pay you for anything or buy anything from you. They don't want to be associated with a goofball like me. So, you know, it's one thing to get a lot of money for a book like Communion, which I certainly did. Another thing to divide that over 35 years and see how little that actually amounted to. So we lost the cabin about 15 years later, but the experience soon followed us. It followed us to the little condo in San Antonio, Texas, my hometown, that we managed to get a hold of. I'm living now in California, and if anything, the experience is more intense right now than it has been ever in my life. I'm so involved. The whole barrier between the living and the dead and my experience has collapsed, and I'm writing a book with my wife, and, I'm sure that people will say, oh, that's impossible.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is Whitney Strieber, author of the best-selling Communion series of books. And we're talking about his latest book, The Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained. We'll be back with more after this break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Whitney Strieber, in The Supernatural, Jeffrey Kripal draws some parallels between what people are seeing now and the experiences that you had, and experiences such as Moses had with the burning bush, St. Paul's encounter on the road to Damascus. The only thing new, he says, are the names. Can you expand on that for us? Hello, Whitley, are you there? Well, it seems as though we may have lost Whitley Strieber. We'll see if we can get him back. Just bear with us for a few moments.
Hello.
Whitley, are you with us?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I think we lost you there for a few moments.
Yes, something is wrong with this line. It just went totally dead, and now it's back, thankfully. I hope I haven't wasted too much of your time.
No, that's okay. I just asked about the parallel that Jeffrey Kripal draws in The Supernatural. Between what people are seeing now, what you experienced, and experiences that are shared in Ezekiel, in the Bible, experiences like Moses had with the burning bush, St. Paul's encounter on the road to Damascus. I mean, they're really interesting parallels that he's drawn there. Could you expand a little bit on that?
Sure. This is, if you look back across our history, there are a number of what I call incidents of light which have formed at least Western culture. An example is the burning bush. Moses sees the burning bush, and there comes from that a new kind of religion which is with us to this day. And what's new about it is not the idea of the single God that predated this. That was when Akhenaten came up with the idea of the single solar deity. Then Moses came along, and suddenly the God is invisible. The God can't be seen. The temple in Jerusalem is unique in the ancient world in having nothing in its Holy of Holies. In the Holy of Holies of the Temple of Jupiter in Rome, or the Temple of Athena in Athens, there was an enormous, brightly painted statue of the god, and people believed that actually was the god. The temple was empty, meaning that this god could stay with us through all of the future evolution of our cultures. This God was not confined to the imagination of the period in which it was invented. This God was could be part of the imagination of every period in its future. Then came another incident on the road to Damascus, as you mentioned. A flash of light changed a man's life. This was a man who had been persecuting Christians, after all. He was responsible for the first martyrdom, the martyrdom of St. Stephen. He was a committed supporter of the Romans and a practitioner of the religion of Mithra. And now suddenly, everything changes. He changes the world because of a flash of light. And what does Muhammad see in the cave but a glowing angel, another incident of light? So light plays an enormously important role in human culture. We are as we are because of these incidents of light. And I think that light is conscious. I think that light is a conscious entity. There's another incident of light. It is not light that anyone saw, but it left a definite trace in the form of the Shroud of Turin, which was created by an extremely high intensity and extremely brief flash of light. That image was created that way. It's not a medieval forgery. That's bunk. It really is an extraordinary image, again created by light. So I think that consciousness lives outside of us. I do not think that consciousness is confined to the brain. I think that the brain is a mechanism that consciousness uses to penetrate into the physical world, not that consciousness is generated in the brain at all. So that's my further comment.
Interesting that those experiences that you've just been talking about, I mean, were regarded as religious experiences, and that was okay. But anyone who's having experiences today, you know, they're UFOs or they're crazy people for reporting things like that.
Well, yeah, but they were considered crazy then, too. I mean, after all, Moses was not considered crazy, but initially Muhammad certainly was. And Paul was martyred for his beliefs because he was basically considered a raving madman and a person who was angering the gods with his ravings. So, yes, and, you know, it's very important to me. And one of the things, I became aware of all of this, and I'm very aware of the power of folklore. I don't think that these religions have really helped us all that much. I think they have had a certain civilizing influence, but there's been a tremendous downside to all of them. Another incident of light like that, a darker, more evil one, could be considered the one created by science, the atomic bomb. And that has also changed our cultures profoundly and may, in fact, end our world. Dark light. In any case, we need to be more objective about this and to approach this level of consciousness as we would approach each other, not as if it is some kind of exalted being. We draw conclusions based on our cultural backgrounds, and we're doing that now with the UFO experience. Most UFOs that are seen are little balls of light or flashes of light. Very rarely is a structured craft seen. Mostly what are seen are lights. Beautiful lights. In one case, Ann and I were with some friends in Florida, and we saw a ruby-colored UFO. It was one of the most beautiful lights I've ever seen in my life. It was heart-rendingly beautiful. The ruby was so gorgeous. And then it quietly eventually winked out. But we need to see this in a more objective way now. Instead of letting the UFO folklore drift as it is drifting now into a religion, a very Manichaean religion, where there are good blonde aliens and evil reptilian aliens and the grays that were the primary focus of it originally, have sort of faded into insignificance in favor of this other belief system. It's turning into a kind of religion, and there are people who are channeling them and this and that, and it's not good. We could be more objective and look at this as an energetic relationship with another level of reality. Simply that.
Are there any commonalities between experiencers? I mean, I know that you've talked about many people and found in all the letters you received after communion that many people had many diverse experiences, but they also, some had similar experiences to you, seeing the same kind of face that you had on the cover of communion. I mean, why is it that some people have these experiences and others don't?
Well, I'm not so sure that others don't. I think that it's more accurate to say that some people can remember these experiences and others can't or won't or don't. I'll give you an example of what I mean. A psychologist I knew was driving along the Grand Central Parkway across from LaGuardia Airport in rush hour in Manhattan one evening, dark, you know, midwinter evening, when he, to his absolute horror, saw coming toward him at a low altitude an enormous jet. it was apparently landing on the highway instead of one of the runways. And he thought, oh my God, it's going to be a terrible catastrophe. But when it went over him, he looked up at it, and it looked to him like a gigantic model, that it was actually fake. It wasn't real. The next thing he saw as his eyes went back to the road, they caught the flickering of a sign off on the shoulder of the road, and it was an unusual sign. You remember that back in the old days, there used to be a lighted news sign in Times Square and in Piccadilly Circus and different places where the news would be rushing around on a lighted billboard, and it was a billboard like that, only the images rushing across it were not anything he had ever seen before. But he did see cars pulling up on the shoulder and people getting out and walking off into the dark area that was up under this sign. And so he stopped and got out because he was really very curious about what was going on. He walked toward the dark area, and as he was walking there, he saw these people had gathered into a circle, all with their heads down, all sort of just standing there in a circle. And suddenly this little dark blue figure walked up to him and looked up at him with what he described as terrible eyes and said, "Get out of here." And he got in his car and drove away. Did any of those people remember that? What was happening? These dark blue figures call themselves Soltecs, and I think they are managing the life of souls and the movement of souls between worlds and levels of reality. And I think they are part of us.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with author of the best-selling Communion series of books and host of the Dreamland podcast, Whitley Strieber. We're discussing his latest book, The Supernatural, A New Vision of the Unexplained. We'll be back in a few moments.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatesPR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Whitley Strieber, you spoke before about the dark blue beings. What makes you think that they are managing souls?
You'll have to repeat it. I'm sorry. We're having some audio issues. I didn't hear you.
You spoke about the dark blue beings before the break. What makes you think that they are managing souls and the movement of souls?
Well, I'll tell you. First, what they call themselves Anne's secretary is still a lady called Laurie Barnes, and Anne and Laurie worked together for 15 years on this. And Laurie was an experiencer herself, and back in the early 50s, this is what happened to her. She was in bed at about 11 o'clock at night. Her husband, who was a performer, was out working, and she noticed movement in the room, and she glanced up and saw this line of these dark blue figures beside the bed staring at her. And, of course, she was absolutely terrified. There was nothing like that in the human consciousness in those days, nothing at all. She wasn't even aware of anything about aliens of any kind. And she recoiled, whereupon the one in the lead put his hand on hers and said, "Do not be afraid. We're not here for you. We're interested in the girl child you're carrying." She was pregnant at the time, which, of course, didn't exactly calm her down. And then it asked her, "Why do you fear us?" And she said, "Because you're so ugly." And it said something I think that is quite important and quite revealing. It replied, "One day, my dear, you will look just like us." In other words, she will graduate into this other level of being, is what he was saying, and she will be doing the same work they are doing, working with souls. They regard sin as a disease, and they see it as markings on souls, and it's something they're interested in curing. That's how they look at it. I know them very well. They've been in my life now for 35 years. In fact, even as a child, I knew them. When they came to our cabin, they would often come to the children in the cabin and shine lights on their arms and legs and bodies and say, "We are looking at your soul." And so I think that's what they are, and I think that's what they do, and I think what they said to Laurie tells me that they are part of us.
So your conclusions are that it seems to me that there's a consciousness, and what we're perceiving as alien beings, we're actually interacting with that greater consciousness. Is that correct?
Yeah. I would think so.
So throughout the millennia, I mean, you referenced earlier Dr. Jacques Vallée, whose book, The Passport to Magonia, argued that the old fairy faith of Northern Europe and the modern UFO close encounter experience involved the same beings. So
yes.
Throughout millennia, you're saying that we've had many, many experiences, and they're all recorded in different ways, whether in mythology, in works like the Bible, etc. It's the same kind of experience, but people are putting an interpretation on it according to whatever, the cultural norm is for them.
We can't tell that for sure because the descriptions are different. I have a feeling that the modern descriptions of the experience might be a little bit more accurate because of the arrival of things like technology in our own lives and science. We're beginning to maybe see this a little bit more objectively than it was seen in the past. We have perhaps more information. Of course, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, our newfound technological vision could simply be imposing a new and no more accurate impression of what's going on than the last vision was imposed by the last cultural ideation we were involved in that gave us things like the fairy faith.
Do you have any conclusion about the why? Why the interaction? What is the purpose of it?
Yeah, I think it's about souls. It is about building a bridge between the living and the dead, because as we move into the next era, we are going to go through a period of upheaval, and the human species is going to be challenged as never before, and we are going to need to be in contact with the non-physical side of this species. This species has got to become whole, physical and non-physical working together. And what this whole experience has been about from the beginning is making that happen. The two sides of mankind right now are divided completely, like a left and right brain. But like a left and right brain, they have to learn to work together in order to navigate what is coming. I think that is why this experience is happening, why it has always been happening, and why it is getting more and more focused over time.
What do you think will happen if we don't come together?
I think the physical side of it will go extinct in all likelihood.
So
it'll be like a stillbirth. Mankind is going down the birth canal. That's why we're moving from Pisces to Aquarius. Pisces, the little fish, is swimming in the river of life. Everything it needs is given to it. Aquarius, the water carrier, pours out the water, and the little fish lands on the ground. And what does he do now? How does he survive? He survives by changing his nature.
But that's humanity. I mean, what about the essence of us? What about the, the unchanging, immortal essence of us? Humanity may not continue, but surely the essence of us has to continue.
Well, it has to. And I think that it will end up in a situation where there are parts of it that are probably finished and parts of it that aren't. A species like ours is like a work of art, and if the artist leaves the canvas before the work is finished, the work remains, but the work will never be finished. And I think that if we come together, we will finish this. We will be born alive, as it were, into a new level of reality, but if we don't, then we won't.
Now, you published a book called The Key, A True Encounter. You had an encounter with somebody who turned up in your hotel room, a being that I think you called the Master of the Key, or you referred to him as the Master of the Key. And he gave you a number of lessons in personal development and human potential and the fate of humanity. What you've just shared, is that the information that he gave you?
No, this is from my own mind and my work with my wife. It may be in the key. I don't know. And so the key is a very strange sort of a thing. I didn't publish it for 2 years. This morning after it happened, I called Anne and told her, never let me blow it off. But because I do blow things off, I started out in this a confirmed physicalist. I am a very unwilling dualist, and so she kept after me for 2 years, and I finally sat down and turned the notes into the book. But I don't know who that was. She had a very interesting take on it. She said it was, and the reason I'm suspicious is that if you look at it carefully in the context of my own past work, you can find lots of things in my past work that are said in the key. In other words, a lot of it obviously comes out of my own mind. So how can he have actually existed? Maybe it was a dream. Anyway, she said, what it is it's you from the future. And the reason she said that is the key is also paradoxically, in terms of what I just said, full of references to scientific discoveries that didn't exist then, but have been made steadily ever since the book was published and written. It's amazing in that respect. And, he gave me things like this idea of the superstorm, of this tremendous storm, which when I eventually pulled together material that I found in the scientific literature that suggested to me that it might be possible, and the book Superstorm that was published after that based on this was scoffed at as nonsense. However, now Dr. James Hansen and I think 11 other prominent climate scientists have published an extremely important paper saying that the superstorm is real and that it has happened in the past and could happen again. So, you know, and he said, another thing he said was that there was more than one universe, something that at the time I thought was nonsense. I put it in the book because I remembered him saying it. Now, it's a commonplace of astrophysics that there may be other universes out there that we haven't detected because of the nature of the background radiation in our own universe, and also there's a huge gap in our universe.
Whitley Strieber, it seems that we've run out of time, I'm afraid. Sorry, we can't continue this conversation. I know that you did want to share that all of the letters that your wife catalogued have now been catalogued and are being saved and archived at Rice University in Texas to form the largest archive folkloric narrative ever assembled in the world and history. I guess the story continues. We will not know the answers. We don't know the answers. We can only speculate, but thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to know more about Whitley Strieber and his